Welcome back, folks. We are joined by Louisiana's Attorney General Liz Murrell to talk about a number of issues. Liz, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me, Newell. It's always good to be with you.
So, General, let's start with the NOLA idea. I've done a monologue or two about this already. It's a head scratcher for me. It seems like this is just going to cause some be confusing to folks. Your thoughts about this whole process?
Well, I think from a, basically from a fundamental level, I think it's a complete waste of time and money. I don't know if they want to expend resources on helping people get identification, then it would make a lot more sense for them to help them get the official state ID. It's not hard to get it. We had some programs in place after Hurricane Katrina. You may recall Judge Jay Zaney helped kind of work with the Bar Association to make sure that people who had lost their identification paperwork could go get it replaced and get identification so that they could access to public services through FEMA and other public programs after that storm. You know, just makes sense to me that if you really wanted to help, then you would be helping them get the official state ID, not trying to create one of your own.
It, as I look at the number of cities that have this municipal ID, they have a lot in common. One, they're all Democrat-led cities, and two, they're all sanctuary cities. Think there's
right.
a connection?
100% there's a connection. You know, I saw that this, I've been, you know, just in some of the coverage of the mayor's travel over the last several years, I mean, she's attended a number of conferences that were promoting this this alternative identification, and I think some of the promotions of it included partnerships with like MasterCard and places where you'd be able to load them up with benefits and just create an alternative identification program. I do think that it was partly intended to be an ID that they would be able to use for voting purposes, which is problematic. And I've already been in conversations with the Secretary of State to make sure that it's not.
Well, they also say that this can be used for law enforcement related purposes, but yet there's 21 different items that you can bring in that are not government, all government issued in order to get this municipal ID. And I wonder whether or not we're, you know, booking departments in jails across the state or any other city that may have this, if they're going to use this ID, if you have somebody that has no prints on file and they present this ID, you could manipulate this really easy and never really know who you have. I mean, I just think this is a very dangerous practice because the underlying documentation is problematic.
Right. That's right. So, I mean, they're making it intentionally by design. They're going to make it easier for people to get this card that purports to be an ID card. But who is it identifying? You know, you could have 10 of them that identify a whole host of different aliases and then use them for different purposes. So, you know, I think they are creating a monster. Unnecessarily, they're going to spend taxpayer dollars to do it. It is going to contribute to fraud in public programs, not assist people in accessing those benefits. And the simple solution was simply to help them go get a state ID instead of trying to create an alternative one. I can't think of any good reason for doing this.
Well, the leaders
it's not
of the
to get a library card.
You know? Yeah, no.
I mean, they could
no,
go to the and, library and get a library card.
But they do want to establish a third gender marker, and it seems as though the LGBTQ community is all about this and having M for males, F for females, and X for anyone who does not identify as the other two genders. Again, creating confusion and creating issues that we need not have to deal with.
Well, and look, as long as it's not official for any other purpose, I mean, I can create an ID on the internet. I can go get a, you know, stuff from Office Depot and encase it in plastic and hold it out. I can put my picture on it. I can do all kinds of things, you know, if I want to. But it has no official purpose. The only one that actually is acceptable is your official state ID. They are trying to create pathways within New Orleans where it's acceptable. I think that that's going to ultimately trigger legislation that's going to be necessary to say that it is unacceptable for things like, you know, accessing SNAP benefits or showing eligibility for Medicaid or voting or any number of other state programs. It's just going to create unnecessary duplication and probably fraud, and I think it's a big mistake.
So while we're on this subject, let me ask you this question. Is New Orleans a sanctuary city?
You know, interesting comment that I saw made by one of the candidates for sheriff. I do not think that the city council has adopted any specific policies that I'm aware of that would qualify it as a sanctuary city. Is it a friendly place with, you know, sanctuary attitudes? I would say yes. Does it have actual policies that have been adopted by the city council that would make it a sanctuary city? I don't think so. Now, the sheriff has a policy in place that I believe is a sanctuary policy. ICE has actually filed a brief in support of my lawsuit against the sheriff's office and the sheriff to take that policy down. It was put in place by Marlon Gussman. And, you know, it's just maintained by consent of the sheriff because it does violate two statutes now that are in play as state statutes. And the consent agreement itself said that it should end if it's ever in if new state, if federal or state law changed. Well, state law did change, and that was a condition to dissolve the agreement. And yet I am getting opposition on that front from the sheriff.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting, you know, because the other comment is that we need to treat this segment of the population with dignity and respect. And I was saying this earlier. Well, you know, that those are two-way streets. And when you violate the laws and the customs and norms of this country, you're not exhibiting dignity and respect, and you earn those things. And, you know, how is it not dignified or disrespectful if you notify ICE that you have a person that presents itself at your booking facility that's illegal? It's just kind of curious.
These are not inconsistent things. You can treat all people with dignity and respect. That doesn't mean they get to violate the law. So, you know, the law is the law, and in enforcing the law, we should always treat people with dignity and respect. But it's not I don't really understand that point. That's not an excuse to violate the law. It's not disrespectful or undignified to require compliance with the law.
Yeah. I mean, I remind people all the time that we take an oath of office, right? And we're going to enforce the laws of the United States, the Constitution and laws of the United States, the Constitution and laws of this state, and the ordinances of our municipality. There's not an asterisk, you know.
Right.
Unless I disagree. I mean, I just don't understand where we're going in this country with these exceptions. You know, that we bring our ideology to the office, and we're not able to square it up with the Constitution and the laws. I mean, and we're seeing more and more of this. And it's interesting that a sheriff's candidate would be confused about whether or not we're a sanctuary city.
I think the candidate in question did say she was going to follow the law. I hope that that's true. If she is going to follow the law, then that means that she shouldn't be resisting to get dissolving this particular order. The jail can adopt its own policy, but that policy should accommodate and cooperate with ICE. I mean, we are talking about detainers that are being put on people for violating criminal laws This just shouldn't be hard. I don't know why the policy is in place that's in place. It dramatically exceeds anything that was ever required by federal law and the constitutional minimums. You know, I mean, constitutionally, we shouldn't be over detaining people. And I think that that's a, you know, there are restrictions on that. And that's true for ICE detainers as well. That was the original impetus for that lawsuit. But the policy that's in place goes way beyond that.
No doubt, for sure. Let's pivot real quick. We've had a mess in the criminal district court for a while. Judge Derbigny was treating this as mailbox money, almost like rental property, not showing up in court, not managing his docket. And finally, we've had to take some remedial action. I read the other day that the DA was asking to delay your taking on some cases and the appointment of two separate judges to that section of court. Where does this stand at the present time?
Well, you know, as a matter of law, these are Jason Williams cases. And so unless they were already assigned to my office by request from the DA for an assist or a recusal, or, you know, just part of our Troop NOLA memorandum of understanding, then they are by default the district attorney's cases to defend. I have offered my assistance. I have made it clear that I would take as many as 250 cases from that docket and that we would move them forward. The Louisiana Supreme Court is trying to, you know, set up a system where we can very efficiently and quickly triage and move those cases forward. Some of them have been delayed for a significant period of time, and I think it's important that we do that. And so I'm there. I've offered my help. Initially, we had an agreement that we were going to divide the cases by odd and even numbers and then kind of triage from there to see whether some needed to be handed back or he had some that needed to be handed to me. And now, you know, the district attorney seems to think that he should go through all of them and handle all of them on the front end and then see what would be handed to me. I'm not sure that's a situation that's going to work for me. I think the original arrangement was probably the more efficient and the best one, but they are his cases. I mean, I can't take them from him without his request.
Right. Do you see this around in other district courts around the state of Louisiana where you have these judges that are just complete outliers as it relates to the number of cases on their docket?
It's hard to say, and it's hard. I mean, we do have problems. Like here in the 19th JDC, we have issues as well, maybe for different reasons. It's hard to say where it's happening and why it's happening. And the reason for that is because we really do not have any central data collection and representation of what's going on in our court system. And I absolutely think that needs to change. It is a product more of everybody in the different clerk's offices and sheriff's offices and court systems all using potentially different ways to collect and store their data. But in this day and age, we ought to be able to have a central way of viewing all the data and seeing what's going on in our court systems all over the state. That's the vision that I have. I think that's what we all need to continue to be working toward. And I don't think it ought to take us a decade to get there. I think that, you know, some of it's political resistance at the local level, access to the data, changing vendors, coming up with consistent ways to represent the data. These are all challenges. But, I mean, the objective really ought to be transparency. It shouldn't be that hard for us to see what's going on in our courts.
Can we anticipate some legislation in that regard?
I'm pursuing it. I'm still trying to kind of set up basically what would be a pilot project where we pull data from some of the most, the busiest dockets like New Orleans, Jefferson Parish, Baton Rouge, Caddo, you know, looking at where we have the most active dockets and the highest levels of crime. And then extracting those and trying to represent that data to the public. I can tell you that I'm not going to wait on everybody else. If this data is publicly accessible and available, then I'm looking for the tools, the tech tools that will allow us to extract it and represent it to the public. And so I don't really think we need legislation to do that. We need funding. I hope that I'll have the support of the legislature to be able to do that, because it's necessary and it's important to have that transparency.
Have there been conversations with the Louisiana Supreme Court? Because they have a lot of authority, right? I mean, to engage in this.
They do.
As well.
I certainly have expressed my opinion to several of the justices on the Supreme Court that I think they could take a much stronger position on it, and that they, you know, have the ability to exercise oversight and compliance by the judges. Now, the clerk's offices are the ones that also need to comply, and I think that the clerks have been working toward this goal. You know, I think for a number of us, we'd like to see it happen faster. And I would like to kind of dig a little deeper to see what their solutions are. But I think they're now, when we have some of the tech tools that are available to us now, I just don't think it needs to be as complicated maybe, or as expensive maybe, as some people want to make it. But you know, everybody's got their own vendor. Everybody's got their own system. You know, we still need to force, I think we need to use the budget if we can to kind of create incentives for compliance.
Yeah, because there's a lot of outcomes that would be interesting. You know, the exercise of discretion, as you well know, and I think you would agree with me, leads to, you know, the phrases that are used often, disproportionate sentencing, disproportionate treatment, disparate treatment, things of that nature, all are byproducts of the exercise of discretion. And it'd be interesting to find out who the outliers are, right, and where they are and why they are. You know, because I think the taxpayers would be very interested.
Lots of interesting things you could do with the data. And, you know, here's what happens. You'll have some organization with an advocacy agenda. A good example of that was the study that was done by the advocate on non-unanimous jury verdicts. I actually hired a statistician to look at that study and see, you know, if you could replicate the results, examine the results from a statistical analysis standpoint. Would they withstand scrutiny under the standards that are required for experts in the courts? And I can tell you, hands down, it didn't. And so the newspaper has its own standards for presenting data, and they had a story they wanted to tell. They made the data fit the story. The data didn't fit the story when you really drilled down from a statistical analysis standpoint on how they did and conducted the study, what they looked at, what all the variables were that were existent and not addressed properly in the conclusions that they drew. And so anybody who has an agenda can grab data and make it do what they want it to do. What we want is to collect all the data and be able to sort of, you know, look at it. It's data. It's objectively representable information, and we should be able to put it out there so that people can see it.
I could not agree more. Real quick, we just have a minute left. Medicaid fraud arrests. We're seeing this more and more and more. I guess it's emblematic of the fact that a lot of people are abusing the system.
Yeah, I mean, there's always been a lot of people abusing the system, and the tools for us to find them continue to get better. We have pretty good tools for finding these people. We've had a number of arrests recently that have gotten a lot of public attention, and we're going to continue to pursue them. We pursue both with our federal grant, we pursue provider fraud, and with our state funding, we pursue recipient fraud. And so we're going to continue to address fraud across the whole system. We also pursue people who are engaging in insurance fraud and workers' comp fraud and, you know, any other kind of theft from government programs.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for joining us. I appreciate we covered a lot of material in a short period of time.
Thank you
so much. Have a great week. Liz Murrell, Louisiana's attorney General, keep up the great work.
Thanks, Noel. Bye.
We will be right back, folks. Stay with us.